Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You can find me on Twitter at Twitter/Stephen the Warman, one word, and you are listening to the podcast in one of two ways. You are either at the direct blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. The show usually posts to that. I'll also put it on my Twitter, but the show goes there. But the most efficient way to get the show is to go through the iTunes search engine. My show has been on iTunes for a couple years now. Just enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and my show should pop right up. I've got a special guest who's joining me from Thailand right now. We've been having connection problems in and out. I'm going to check just to make sure he's there. Rob, you still there? All right, so I lost Rob for a second. Give me one moment, folks, and I will have Rob back on. Okay, I lost Rob for a second, and I got him back now. Rob, say hello to the people and tell them where to find you on Twitter and so on.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be here. I'm Rob Cox, from based in Thailand. I've been a journalist, Muay Thai journalist, here for many years now. You can find me on Twitter, Rob Bangkok, I think. I can't even remember my own Twitter handle. That's good start, isn't it?
No worries.
Facebook, Muay Thai Focus, or also www.muaythaifocus.com.
All right, cool. And with Rob on, we're really going to hit the stadium stuff hard. We're going to talk about some of the elite fighters and some of the big-time events, and we're going to talk about just the feel of the 2014 year in full rules Muay Thai. We're going to get some Raja talk. We're going to get some Lumpini talk. First and foremost, Rob, my first question is, what do you feel about the year of 2014 in general? If you look at it and compare it to some of the other years, and of course, you've been in Thailand, you know, kind of through the golden years, but what would you, how would you compare this year compared to other years?
It's been an interesting year. There's still been some great fights. It's obviously the biggest thing that's happened this year has been the transition from the old Lumpini Stadium to the new one, and that's kind of, it's kind of opened up people's eyes a little bit to the kind of the state of the sport nowadays, and they've been struggling a little bit with that. But it's also in another, and it's prompted a bit of resurgence for Ratchaburn Stadium, which is really doing well at the moment. So in terms of fights, it's not been that much different to the previous few years. There's been some great fights, there's some great young fighters coming through. But the biggest thing that's happened, obviously, has been the change in the Lumpini Stadium, and it's caused some problems, to be fair.
Oh, could we explore that a little bit more? You know, before we talk, when we talked last time, I had, you know, we were talking about how it was going to open and so on, and I haven't had you on since then. What's the feel like? Would you feel like being there? There are some times when I watch footage of it online and I think, man, it looks amazing, and there's some times where I think, man, it's a little empty. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, in terms of actually being the stadium itself, you know, it's beautiful. They've done a great job with it. Wherever you be in a stadium, you've got a great view. I mean, you can kind of go down the path of like the traditionalists and say, oh, it didn't have the character, the old stadium. But on the other hand, you know, the old stadium, you could be, I mean, I'm a photographer and I'm lying on the ring and it stinks of cat pee. And, you know, it's where certain positions in the stadium, you're not going to have a very good view. It was kind of run down. It wasn't the greatest in terms of a spectator experience. The new stadium's beautiful. You know, it's the design of it, everything else. The atmosphere is great in there when it's a really big crowd. The big problem with it is the location. You know, it's kind of, they moved it north of Bangkok, and location wise, to be fair, it's not very good. It used to take me an hour maximum to get to the old stadium. It's taken me 4 hours sometimes with the traffic. You know, it's clearly had an effect on the numbers of people going there, and the promoters unfortunately are struggling now.
Yeah, that's good information. I was surprised by that, because when I was in Thailand, I remember it was just right downtown. Like it was really, really easy for me to get to. So that,
you had the underground. You had the underground right next to it. It's right near the main hotel areas. It's very close to as well the old stadium, but the new one, it's kind of like out in the north in an industrial area. And all the kind of roads going to it, some of the worst roads for traffic in Bangkok, which is not good, you know.
For sure. Well, let's go ahead and get into the fighters that make the life. I mean, this really comes down to the athletes that compete. If you were to name, you know, three fighters that people, you know, they're the must-see people. We'll get into award winners and all that stuff in a little while. But just talk about three fighters that you say, you know what, if you ever try it, you know, if you travel to Thailand, you want to see a stadium show, what three people would you recommend? Did I lose you? Still there, Rob? Rob, you still there? Hold on 1 second, folks. We may have lost Rob. Give me 1 second. Okay, I got Rob back. Rob, as I was saying before, three fighters that you think are the people to see right now, the fighters to see if they were to go to the stadiums.
Say number one, you've got to say Sexan or Quan Wong. You know, if there's any fighter out there that's very, very, I mean, I'd say never in a bad fight, you'd have to say Sexan. I mean, he's got the nickname in Thai, they say Con Me Yong Krai, which kind of means the man who yields to no one. It's, you know, he gives 200% every fight. He's in, you know, some of the classic fights over the years. You know, he'd be number one without a doubt. After him, I mean, some people bag on Superbank. You know, they say, oh, he's not the most exciting. I like to watch him. They're very technical. He's a kind of like a thinking man's fighter. It might not be on everyone's list, though, Superbank, Moratan Avandit. For me, I always enjoy watching him fight. And going to the smaller fighters, I always like Satan Mungleng. Numpontape. I mean, he's used quite a few different gym names over the years, Satan Mungleng. But his current name, Numpontape, he's another young fighter that's very, very rarely in a dull fight. Huge heart, you know, he'll often have to use his heart and his determination to win sometimes against bigger fighters, but always gives 100% as well.
Okay, well, so let's
in the three for me.
Cool. Well, let's talk about Superbank for a second. Superbank was named both Raja and Lupini, I think, Stadium Fighter of the Year for 2014. And if I'm remembering correctly, Superbank was in the four-man tournament earlier in the year. And
it was the last time he lost, I think, if I remember right. He lost to
Sagmini.
I thought he got that decision as well. That was a very, very close one.
For sure. So, yeah, there was that. But then, of course, after that, in that tournament, he beat Sam A. He beat Thansingelek during the year. What are your thoughts on him, just in general? Do you feel like he would be your pick for Fighter of the Year for the stadiums?
Yeah, I don't think you can really pass him, you know, in terms of level of competition. And, you know, there was the controversy with the award to Muang Thai, who just kind of had his contract bought out by PK Sanjiajin. And, you know, there was this furore on social media, you know, like, and it was like a lot of people saying, well, you can't get the award because Muang Thai not had the required rest between two of the fights they used to give the award out. You're supposed to have 21 days, and there was like two fights where he only had 15 days rest between them. Mm-hmm. But then there was a lot of people also saying at the same time, you know, it should be Superbank. Superbank should get the award. And anyway, they decided Muang Thai didn't get the award. It was given to Superbank. And then shortly after that, they both fought. And, you know, it was clear in that fight. Superbank, although a fair bit smaller than Muang Thai, I mean, he can fight down a lower weight. He was still just a level above, you know. It was clear in that fight that he won, like, I think, 49-47, which is on all the judges' scorecards as well, which is a clear win, really, you know.
Okay, well, I want to go ahead and build on the Fighter of the Year thing. The writers gave Pompeyuk Fighter of the Year for the 2013 season, yeah. And they usually give that out in the following year around the, you know, April, May.
That's month. It, yeah.
So my question to you is, how does Pompeyuk rank in terms of, like, some of the winners that we've had recently? Yodwicha and Sagmini the year before, Panak, Kangsak in 2010, I want to say. How does he stand up with some of the more recent winners? And then where would you rank him just kind of like in some of your favorites over the years?
I would say with Pompeyuk, there was a bit of a surprise when he won the award, to be honest. I mean, you know, going a little bit controversial here, you know, a lot of people are saying he didn't really deserve it yet because he was still young and the level of fighters he fought, but he never lost throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone's favourite was Pek Bun Chu because he beat Sanchai two fights in a row, which no one had ever done before. You know, normally there was a saying about Sanchai, if he loses, he always wins a rematch, but he lost to Pek Bun Chu two fights in a row. He beat Yodwicha, I think, if I remember right.
Yep.
And, you know, all the big names. A lot of people felt that Pek Bun Chu should have got it. But Pompeyuk was something of a surprise, to be honest. But, I mean, in terms of ability level, you know, you could always see him being up there and having a chance of getting it at some point. Because he's, you know, as a kid fighter, he was a prodigy. You know, he was a real talent. everyone's saying, oh, this guy's going to be, you know, in the future, he's going to be like the next sort of big superstar. So it was always kind of expected that he was going to get the award at some point. But it was, I think there was the general consensus at the time was it was a bit too early. He didn't really deserve it yet. But, I mean, Superbank's probably one of the this year if he doesn't lose. But Pampiak's pushing him real close as well. Because I think Pampiak's only had one loss and he overturned that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably high up in the ranking to get it again this year. And there's only been so far, I think, two fighters that have won it back-to-back. And that was Gensak Torplengir and then Anouak Kjelsenret. So if he carries on doing well this year, Pampiak, you know, there's say, for example, Superbank has a loss or two, there's a chance he could win it 2 years in a row.
How do you feel like Pampiak is received by the fan base? For example, when I look at footage of Anouak, as you mentioned, he just seems so beloved. Like, you know, win, lose, or draw, he's going to give you a KO or he's going to lose on points. But everybody loved him. Like, how do you think Pampiak, you know, how does he sit with the crowds?
Well, Pampiak's kind of got that classic technical style. He sometimes, you know, they might complain a little bit, he goes back too much or... but he's, you know, I think he's generally recognised he's an amazing talent, you know, very, very skillful, very hard to beat on his day. Yeah. I wouldn't say he's probably got the same drawing power as Anouak, though. You know, Anouak could fill a stadium with that. Will he or won't he knock him out? You know, the styles. It's a very big difference in styles.
Okay. Well, I'll build one more thing on Pampiak. You mentioned that he was just this prodigy. Like, people saw him when he was young, and they knew he was going to be, you know, this star. Could you name some of, you know, any other fighters that, you know, people who are listening to the show, where they, like, maybe they see them as a star now, but you knew about their buzz when they were younger? Are there any other guys that are kind of like Pampiak where you're like, this person is going to be the it guy? Because in American sports, we have that it guy in, like, all of our sports where you could see this kid young. Do you have anybody that you can say in recent years that are similar to Pampiak?
There's quite a few, to be honest. But Jan Chai was always a big name. And Jiang Sangmini as well. Sangmini was another kid that was coming through, and everyone was kind of saying, oh, yeah, this kid's going to be the real thing, you know. And coming through now, you've got some really good young fighters. Pampiak's younger brother is one of them. What's his name? I've forgotten his name now. Something Payak as well. Kjelpayak. He's the younger brother of Pampiak. And he's, you know, he's another fighter. They're going to say, you know, there's a good chance he's going to do the same thing as his brother is. You know, there's a lot of the fighters. But then at the same time, there's a huge kind of falling off as well, where the kids, you know, they get to 16, 17 and they lose interest. I mean, there's been some incredible talents that just kind of decided they want to have a girlfriend, go out with their friends, and just given up, you know.
For sure. And I understand that, and that's just, that's sports worldwide, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, we'll go ahead and build on this a little bit. When we talked before, we talked about how we were in the age when I do my documentary. You know, I did the European version of the documentary, and I released it last year. My next version will be, I'm going to do the Americas, but then when I do the Asia area, when I go down to Thailand or whatever, I had mentioned to you that my goal was to talk about how it was like the age of the tourist. How do you feel about that now? Do you feel like it's still there? And then building on it, do you see any young Forangs that are, you know, clearly we had, you know, Damian Alamos has seemed to have retired of recent, or he stepped away anyways. Are there any other young Forang that people should look out for? And is it still the era of the tourist?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely. I mean, if you go to somewhere like Phuket, I mean, it's just nonstop, you know. There's kind of this new gyms coming all the time. There's definitely a big scene still for tourists, and it's only really going to grow, because for a start, with the actual domestic scene kind of struggling a little bit, a lot of the gyms now are looking to Westerners to try and supplement the income, because it's a lot harder to make money just with Thai fighters now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not changed at all. I mean, there are some good young fighters coming through. I mean, there's shows like Max Muay Thai. They're starting to give more of an opportunity to foreigners as well. There's some good young guys. I wouldn't say there's anyone quite at Damon's level yet, you know, but there's quite a few potential guys coming through. There's a young lad from Chile that sits up in on Ben. He's got potential. He's got a long way to go yet, though, but he's definitely got potential. Trying to think off the top of my head of a few others, but there's a lot of Brazilian fighters here now starting to make a name for himself as well, coming to Thailand. Brazil's kind of seems to be a real developing, fast developing Muay Thai country. You know, lots and lots of Brazilian fighters coming here now. Lots of them are basing themselves here as well and fighting regularly. So I don't think it's going to be too long before they'll have another kind of Damon is going to appear on the scene.
Good, that's awesome to hear. Well, I'll go ahead and definitely want to enter back into the Olympiti Stadium Awards. You had mentioned, one thing that I want to talk about was Pityan D Academy was awarded Gym of the Year. Kitmoon 9 was also mentioned.
Right. I think that was runner-up, if I remember right.
Yep. And then I was wondering, what are your thoughts on that gym, the athletes they produced? And do you feel like that is a warranted, like that was the right winner?
I mean, it depends on what you base it on. I'm not entirely sure what Lumpini themselves, their criteria is. I know for one of the gym, you know, credibility has always been a high thing. You know, if the fighters, one or two of the fighters get thrown out of the ring, suspected of taking a dive, you know, they won't get the award. Or, you know, the quality of the fighters, the level. I mean, to, you know, not disrespecting Pechindi at all. I mean, they've got a very, very strong stable. But if you compare it with someone like Gib Macau, they're all homegrown. Whereas Pechindi, they've kind of come in, and a lot of them are already at a high level. But saying that, though, they've still got to keep them at that high level. And, you know, some of the guys that came into that gym, they weren't on such a good run of form. But when they went into Pechindi, they obviously they got looked after better and became stronger. So I mean, you've got to say, in terms of the level of fighters they've got and the wins they have, then, they're right up there. It's fair enough that they get the award, yeah.
Is there any other gym that you think should be mentioned? Maybe some of your favorite gyms around. Let's go ahead, just use this one as for my listeners. Is there a gym or gyms that you would recommend? Or do you have like a favorite gym or series of gyms that you would like to just promote right now?
I mean, you can never go past Gib Macau. You know, for me, I've always been a fan of their fighters, and especially the fact that, you know, they're this small gym up in the middle of the Northeast, and they just seem to be able to produce good fighter after good fighter. You know, that's probably to watch wise. I mean, if you're talking just for watching fighters, then watching the sport as a fan, then yeah, Gib Macau, obviously Sanchai's new gym, PK Sanchai, they're acquiring a lot of fighters, the owner's a big time gambler, you know, so he's obviously always going to look after the fighters very well, make sure they're in great shape, because he wants them to go in the ring, and because they're using his name, they kind of get an advantage in the eyes of the judges and the crowd a little bit, because, he's looking after him, he's paying them all the purse, he's getting a big tip, so they're going to fight stronger, etc., etc. So, you know, you're always going to get fireworks whenever their guys fight in the ring.
Good to hear.
There's so many good gyms, you know, it can change quite quickly, though, you know. Certain gyms are doing really well at one point, then maybe their boss kind of loses interest a little bit, or the main trainer moves on somewhere, and things can change quite quickly here as well, you know.
Let's go ahead and move down the award list. Award for Best Up-and-Coming Fighter went to Thanadet Tor Pran, 49. My question there is, he fights at 110 pounds. I'm not sure what the that turnover is in kilograms or stones. But what are your thoughts on him as a young fighter? You know, I watched a couple of his fights as I prepared for the show. And the ones that I watched, he didn't have the best showing.
he got that award. You know, had a couple of losses after that. I mean, he's a very exciting fighter to watch. Mm-hmm. He kind of got the award because he kind of went in and he won a tournament, not at Lumpini, but there's a tournament on Channel 11, and it was all the main Lumpini fighters, the Pechindi guys, and he was a big surprise underdog, and no one kind of really knew too much about him before, and then he went in and won that. And then he put on a very strong performance after that against Satan Mung Lek, and he's kind of one of those, like, relentless, like, clinch and knee fighters. He's good. For me, I enjoy watching him, but he's, for me, I personally would have gone for Sprinter. Sprinter, he won the award from another organisation the other night as the best young up-and-comer. I mean, I can't remember seeing him lose, and he just won the Ratchaman title, beating a big name, King Clara. He would be my choice, personally.
It's so funny that you bring Sprinter up, because I was just going into Fighter of the Year and a Fight of the Year. And the winner was Wanchulong versus Chisari. And Sprinter versus Chisari was a awesome fight for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, of course, that one didn't...
Very last second with that high kick.
Oh, yeah.
Bell just to turn it around, so...
That fight, there wasn't any downs. Like, Wanchulong Chisari was, like, back and forth. Chisari knocked Wanchulong down. Wanchulong got the spinning, fist slash elbow, whatever, down. Chisari got another down, and then Wanchulong with the body kick finish. What were your thoughts when you watched this fight? I believe you were there live, correct? Or did you watch?
Yeah.
What were your thoughts when you watched this one live?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was one of those fights you remember, you know, where the hairs go up on the back of your neck and just the whole place is kind of just... in uproar, you know, almost. I think when that kick from Wanchulong went in to finish the fight, you know, the roof almost came off the stadium, you know. It was those are the fights you remember, you know.
And
a privilege to actually be there, you know, on the side of the ring taking photos as well.
And did you feel like that fight was far and away easily fight of the year without contest?
I'd say it was... for drama-wise and suspense and just, you know, the whole shock factor of the different knockdowns, and I'd say, yeah, it probably was. I mean, there's a couple of other fights that I think for actual all-round, I think, I mean, Pakon Seksan for me was another really good fight. That could have got the award, you know, but for actual drama, then yeah, I would say Wanchulong Chisari.
Another fight that brought, you know, pretty good drama was E.T. versus Pornsenai. My question about Pornsenai, and this is a person who, he's one of my, like, I love him as a fighter, and he put on some great fights. He's always entertaining because, you know, and they use him on the Western scene because he fights like a Westerner. He brings it, like, he brings the fight. He doesn't play the game as much. He's, like, always from the beginning of the bell, he goes. But he has taken several bad stoppages in a row. What are your thoughts on him continuing to fight? Do you think that they should call it? Do you think that there's a chance that he would consider stopping fighting? Because, I mean... it's past the point where I say I don't want to see him get hurt because he keeps getting hurt. I root for him and I want him to do well, but at the same time, I think that it's time for him to stop. What are your thoughts on just his career, and what do you think?
I think he could call it a day now, personally, as well. I'd like to see him, you know, it's like a similar thing with Sanjay. It's like, you know, he had built up such a legacy. It's like him kind of like as a stepping stone for the young kids to make a name for themselves. Oh, they've beaten Sanchai, that kind of thing, you know. And with Pontenay, but you've also got the added factor, he's getting hurt every fight, you know. And he's been around a long time now. He's in his 30s, and he was knocked out like over 10 years ago by Yod San Klai, and he's been in wars ever since, you know. I've seen him get knocked out plenty of other times over the years, you know, but now it's got to the stage where it's kind of almost every fight, and, you know, you got to say... sometimes you've got to think of your future, you know, your health. I think for me, I think it's time for him to call it a day.
Going to go ahead and just talk about the scene in general in Thailand. I have a question. We were talking, you mentioned Phuket, and then Samui's another one where they're tourist spots, and they're also starting to bring in a good crop of, you know, Westerners that are coming over and on. Could you explain to people who, you know, are listening to this, the separation in skill level between a stadium in Phuket and a stadium in Lupini? And the reason why I ask this question is because, you know, online I'll see a whole bunch of people, you know, almost every weekend I'll see some video emerge from a stadium in Phuket where a Westerner will beat a Thai, but you'll, like, never see that in the stadiums in Lupini. Like that's just, it's different. Could you explain that? I'm sorry, so they're up. Hold on, you guys. I may have lost Rob. One moment. Sorry, lost Rob. He's in Thailand, so we're doing our best. Rob, same question. Basically, just could you explain the separation of skill level between the guys that are beating Thais on a regular basis in, like, Phuket and the stadiums in Lupini and Raja?
The fights that you see, a lot of the fights where a lot of people complain about, you know, like the guys that look like tuk-tuk drivers kind of, tuk-tuk drivers versus, you know, like some big, huge foreigner, that's quite common there, but it's not the only fight you'll see in Phuket, you know. Obviously there's a lot of young fighters coming through as well, and it's quite scene of like Ty versus Ty, where you can get some really good fights there with the young kids that are coming through. They're not quite the same the size that they can be fighting in the stadiums yet, you know, that kind of thing. But the kind of mismatches, they do tend to stand out a bit. You know, obviously there's a thing there where there's a huge tourist presence in there, and they want to get tourists in, so they want to sort of promote the foreign fighters. And, you know, I mean, I don't know for sure whether it's like they want to see, they've got to see a foreigner win or whatever, but it can look like that a little bit, you know. But at the same time, you know, you've got, a lot of the time these guys are going in and they're unknown entities as well, so it's not easy to match them up sometimes, to be fair to the promoters, you know. So, but it doesn't look good, you know, some of the matchups you see down there, but that's not the whole scene, you know. There are a lot of tough fights down there as well, and for some of the foreigners as well, you know. There are some very good fighters in there, trainers. Some of the guys are trainers in the gym, but they've been, you know, 200 fights, 100 fights at Lumpini. They can make tough fights as well. But you don't tend to get to see them put up on the internet, if you know what I mean.
For sure. Well, let's go ahead and stay with the culture of fighting. You were on TV in the States not too long ago when they were doing a report on children fighting. Like they had talked about it, and my take on it has always been that it is something cultural. As far as my experiences, yeah, when I've been in Thailand, for me, what someone in the West wouldn't realize is it is of the highest honor for a young person to help the financial situation of their family. That's over right, in Thailand. Right. So, like, I remember Buffalo Girls in that documentary, for example. The whole film was the girl won a regional title, and she got her own room, and she got her family a little small home. Yeah. And it was just – I was glowing. I felt so honored seeing it. But us in the West – The only trial we want our kids to run into is when our kid, like, falls in love. Other than that, they don't even like you losing in sports anymore. Right now, they're trying to, in America anyways, they're trying to have everybody gets an award. You get to, you know, in baseball, you get to swing until you get up to bat, or until you get on base, that kind of stuff, whatever. Could you explain that culturally for people who are like, man, those are kids fighting and so on?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know, people have a hard time getting their head around it, but, you know, one thing that I'll also say about this, there's been a massive trend in recent times for stories, and, you know, there was one point where I was getting, like, a phone call maybe once a week from this journalist or that journalist. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm in Thailand at the moment. We're interested in doing something about child fighters. You know, do you know any six-year-olds that fight? And that's kind of like the old angle they're looking for, abused kids, six-year-old. And to be honest, when I said to most of them, you know, well, there really aren't that many six-year-olds that do fight. It's quite rare, to be honest with you. It's not many people actually want to go and watch that either, you know. But it's kind of like it was an easy thing to focus on, if you know what I mean. And most of those people, most of the things that were filmed, I don't think they really went into the whole, the issue that you've raised there, you know, the whole supporting your family and, you know, looking after and making a better life. And, you know, a lot of these kids, they come from a very, very, very hard background, you know. And I think unless people have actually seen that and experienced that or even tried to live like that, then, you know, it's very, very difficult for people from the West to understand, you know, when you're living a comfortable life, you know, your parents have got a good job, you've got school, education's no problem, you've got money to sort of buy it, the latest games, that kind of thing. You know, it's going to be very hard for Western people to get their head around anyway.
For sure. And I definitely think that, you know, that explains it pretty full. In that one of the interviews that I was said that I mentioned you in, they showed you in the commercial, but when they actually did the rundown of the story, they didn't show you. So I know that you
just kidding, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, so it's like, yeah. You probably gave
kind of like the interview, every question was a serious, are they being abused, you know, mm-hmm. What's your take on this? Have you ever seen anyone hit? You know, there was never a kind of, there was very few, like, what positives are there about it, you know, or what these, you know, and kind of be, you know, most of the answers I was giving, well, to be honest, I don't really watch many kids fight, you know, it's I'm in the stadiums, they're kind of controlled there to a certain degree, you got to be a certain age, and it's almost like they're just every kind of article was just going for the sensationalist side straight from the off, you know.
For sure. Well, I'm going to go ahead and build on that with another cultural question before I get back into the fighters that people know. women's fighting is very popular, and it's very popular in Thailand. Like, so much so that I remember when I went there, there was a girl who showed up at the Fairtex gym when I was there, and one of the guys saw her. He watched her in pads for like maybe 1 minute, and he went to his phone and he started looking for a fight for her. And he asked her, like, he didn't even say hi to her first. He just said, "Do you want to fight on a certain day?" Could you explain, you know, that kind of phenomena? How many more women are getting into it? And then on the, you know, the child note, there was the one young girl who was like an internet superstar. Because she was beating boys. Could you explain that to a lot of people and kind of maybe introduce that young lady?
Yeah, Pecky Jar was her name. She, I mean, I saw a fight recently on the first time I actually saw a fight live on the King's Birthday show, and she fought a Thai girl that was a bit bigger than her, but, you know, again, she was just that little bit too good. She's just kind of like on a level above, you know, I think most kids, you know. And the reason she was fighting boys was there just wasn't any girls that could give her a close fight, you know, at the time. And I think at that stage, you know, she could match them, you know, at that young age. I think the bodies are not developed that yet. There's not that much difference in strength, etc., you know. And you know, to be fair to her, she was winning most of the fights. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't want to watch that. You know, it doesn't really do it for me. It's not something I want to sit and watch. But, you know, going back to the culture aspect, you know, like you're saying about the girl there in the gym and the guy straight away wants to get her a fight, you know, he's probably seen a good chance he can win some money, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have to remember as well, in Thailand there's a big gambling side to things as well, you know. So with the whole thing, it's and at the same time, you know, you can't argue with her or her family for that, because they're probably earning a good income from that. Probably a lot more than they would from just the fight purse. You know, there's not really a lot of money in it for females in Thailand. Mm-hmm. There's a fairly decent scene, but it's not that big, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, 99% of people want to watch the guys fight, you know.
For sure. For your personal enjoyment, at what age do you think it's a good time for you to start seeing guys that you're, you know, you enjoy seeing the fights? Like, for example, when I went there, there was a Fairtex Stadium title, regional title, between two 13-year-olds, and it was a clinch battle, and it was awesome. And they were 13, and it was awesome. What age do you think it is a acceptable age, or age that you feel comfortable watching the sport?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, like you say, maybe 13, 14, like 15-year-olds, I can, you know, there's some really good, talented 15-year-old fighters, and, you know, the skill level is kind of, is that bit more evolved, you know, and for me, I don't overly like to see young kids hitting each other too hard or whatever. They don't really at that age anyway, I don't think, you know, because they haven't got the power yet or the build, the muscles, you know. But even so, I still prefer to see them a little bit older myself, you know, 15 years old.
For sure. And, you know, I do credit the refs there, because I think that when a kid is like, if you can't stop something, like you can't get out of the clinch, the ref calls the fight. I think they do a pretty good job.
They're very quick, and that's another thing. And I always emphasise that when I was talking to kind of like the people, like the ESPN people, they say, "Oh, you know, what's it like when you're seeing kids get knocked out?" I mean, you don't really see kids that age get knocked out, you know, very, very rarely. And if a kid looks remotely like he's out of his depth or going to get hurt, the referees normally are very, very quick to step in and stop it when they're younger, you know, the kids fight. So, you know, rightly or wrongly, to their credit, in that side of things, they normally do a good job, you know.
I agree. Well, let's go ahead and get back into the bigger guys, the fights. Let's talk KOs here. You know, there were definitely a lot of, you know, quality KOs. One of the shockers of the year was when Thaksinlek got the KO, the head kick KO over Sam A. But my favorite one was Sam A's KO of Bang Klinoy, because, like, the flow to it was like, you can't. He scored like pretty much every offensive strike in that series before the knees put him away. What are some of your favorite KOs for the past year, or do you have one particular?
The Thaksinlek Sam A one was a good one, because obviously I've got a gym as well, and Thaksinlek comes in and trains a lot for his fights at my gym as well. So it was kind of like, you know, seeing someone that's training in your gym every day as well, and it was a big upset. So that was, for me, was one of the standouts, you know. I'm trying to think, to be honest. I can't, off the top of my head, I think the Chai Siri, going back to the Chai Siri versus Wan Chalong fight as well, you know, the whole drama after, you know, the so many knockdowns in the fight, maybe not the most exciting weapon to finish a fight with, a kick to the body, but even so, it was, you know, it was something special, you know, the whole occasion, you know.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and talk about fighters getting international opportunities. It's starting to happen for some of the Lumpini guys, names that we know. And, of course, clearly your manager has a lot to do with it. But, for example, Pecorn is a guy who, like, I was hoping that he'd get this opportunity one day.
Yeah.
So now that it's happened, it's kind of, you know, went out and for Yakao, he got the win over Greg Wooten. He's fought and he's won on, you know, on a couple other international opportunities. What are your thoughts on guys like Pecorn, you know, getting to leave? There's a couple other names. Pecorn's the one that just, it sticks in my mind off the top of my head. What are your thoughts on, like, some of the more major guys? Pech Bunshu went out and fought Wooten, but there was a loss, but there's no video footage of it, which makes me wonder what that fight looks like. But what are your thoughts on that? Sorry, Rob, you were coming in weird for a moment. Same question. What are your thoughts on some of the elite stadium guys getting international opportunities?
I think he's obviously these kids, you know, a lot of them when they're young, they're starting out and they have a very tough life. Sometimes it can be a very harsh world. Although as much as I've seen the fights in the stadium, it can be a very harsh crowd, you know, especially the gamblers when there's money involved and, you know, they have a bad fight really on their back, you know. So it's... I think it's great that they get an opportunity to go abroad and earn decent money. You know, I'd like to see more and more. You know, the more the merrier for me. Pacon's, there was a piece in the paper saying probably see if I more but abroad instead of in some ways you kind of, oh, you know.
Sorry, I got Rob back on. I apologize for that last question. It came in really weird. Rob, you were saying that you like that guys like Pecorn gets the opportunity, and you were mentioning something about him being in the paper as far as international.
Yeah, he was in the paper the other day, and they were saying like he doesn't want to fight under like 135 now, and you know he's getting older, doesn't want to make the weight, and they said you know he's looking to go overseas now, fight more, so there's a good chance, you know, possibly going to see him fighting abroad more than we were in the stadiums now. I mean, in some ways, it's kind of like, it's a bit of a shame. I'd love to see him fight in the stadiums, but, you know, I think it's great he's getting an opportunity to really earn some decent money, you know, and because it's a tough life, you know. And if they can go abroad, get a name for himself, start making money, seminars. There was talk he was going to fight at Ratchaman next month in a big show, in February in a big show, but he's going to New York now to do some seminars. So, you know, all credit to him, fair play to him. I'm glad that they're getting a chance to actually make some money and make a name for themselves outside of Thailand. You know, the more the merrier for me.
Okay, and then let's go ahead and talk about a couple of fighters that, you know, had big names but probably didn't have the years that they've had in past, and one of them pretty young. Let's talk about Jodvica and let's talk about Sanchai. What are your thoughts on their past year? You know, really kind of a quiet year for both guys.
Jodvica had some problems, I think, with his trainer. He had, you know, had some issues, and there was problems when he was making weight, running up to a couple of fights, and he did a run at the gym the last time. And after that, his boss kind of, he said, you know, he was having problems with his trainer, and his boss, the actual owner of the gym, said, look, come back and train with us up in Korat. And it kind of coincided with Kem opening his new gym. And that's worked out good for Jodvica. So since he's gone and moved over and he's been training with Kem, he's looked unstoppable again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think with him, it was more just issues of training. The problems were, but, you know, it affected him, I think. It seems to have got that behind him now. He's got his focus back now. So I think you're going to see more from him now. Some more big things, you know. Sanchai, I think just with Sanchai, you know, it's just a matter of you can't go on forever, you know. He's, what, 33, 34 now? So he's just kind of winding down, really, I think, in the stadiums. He's fighting this week against Nong Ao. I think after that, you know, you're probably going to see him, you know, very, very rarely, if at all, fighting the stadiums. He'll be fighting abroad, Thai fight, seminars, And again, you know, fair play to him. You know, he's been a brilliant fighter for a long time. He's been really at the top of his game for a long time. So it's nice to see him, you know, hopefully earn some good money for his family, you know.
And what are your thoughts on, you mentioned Max Muay Thai before. Thai fight's still around, still lingering. Yep. I actually personally, I don't even report on Thai Fight because it's just, I don't feel like it's sport anymore to just bring in somebody.
It's just a show, you know. It's kind of unfortunate because he had a lot of potential, but, it's just like a lot of people say, you know, it's kind of can crushing now. It's, you can predict straight away that most of the fights are going to end early, you know. But Max Muay Thai, there's a new guy kind of taken over that, and he's pumped a lot of money into it. He's built a brand new stadium in Pattaya, and I've been doing the commentary on there for every week. And their philosophy is kind of different. They want to get at least 50-50 chance of the foreigners winning. And most of the fights are Thai versus foreigner, but they're all very entertaining. I've seen some great fights on Max Muay Thai this year, over the last year. And they've just had a slight break with the TV. It starts again on 1st of February, where it's going to be on a terrestrial Thai channel. So people overseas can now come watch it every Sunday night, like 6:20, I think, until 9:20 Thai time. So great opportunity, because there's always really good fights on Max Muay Thai, and it's what Thai Fight could have been if they didn't kind of just go down the route of just find anyone for the Thai but fight, you know, and you know, basically mismatches, you know.
For sure. That's exactly how I feel. Like, I thought that they had a great two past years were really good. I like Victor Nagby. I like that they used him, and they used a lot of French fighters. You know, I'm a fan of what they're doing, and I'm glad that you said someone's putting money into them, because I want to see them keep going. I don't really cover Thai Fight anymore.
Channel 8. And I think, which is part of RS, and I think you can get a live stream on that as well. So, and the first show on that is February the 1st, 6:20 Thai time, and it's a four-man tournament, 72-kilo one. And it's got Yusef Bugunem in it, and three Thai fighters. That'll be very good. Yusef's a very good, another very strong foreign fighter. So anyone, write that down and make sure you tune into that, because that'll be worth a look.
Okay, well, we've just got through talking to Rob Cox. You can find Rob on Twitter at @robbkk. And Rob, do you have anybody that you know you want to thank, anyone you want to promote? You've got a gym out there. Is there any? This is your platform to kind of let the people know who you are and how to follow you and that jazz.
I'd just like to thank everyone that's kind of given me support for what I do. You know, I don't do it for money, because I've stopped doing it a long time ago if I was in this for the money. I do it for the love, and I want to get the sport out there, people enjoying it, people following it. So anyone that's kind of given me props or enjoyed what I do, then thanks for that. Anyone interested in training in Thailand, don't forget, give Gitpod Tip Gym a look. We've got some very, very good young talent coming through. And if you want to be trained properly, you know, we treat everybody the same. So if you want a good training, then give us a look. And thanks again for having me on, Steve.
Oh, man, I really appreciate it. And we got to make it more often. I want to try to get you every other month. Cool. Well, you have a good day, and thanks again for joining me.
Mate. Thanks again.
Yeah,
take care. Bye.
That was Rob Cox, everybody. Definitely follow him on Twitter, as I said. I really appreciate him coming by and really sitting on some of the stadium stuff, because a lot of you guys, you'll hear me say it, and I know some of the names that he may have said and that I may have said, they may have eluded you, but as I mentioned before, Muay Thais, Thais like a Thai, T-I-E-S, you find them on YouTube, and like that they do a great job. Live Muay Thai guy, another guy who does an awesome job of getting full stadium rules, shows up all the time, and you guys can see some of the fights that we're talking about, and I'm telling you, I really that fight with Sprinter and Cesare is just an awesome fight. I want you guys to go out, watch these athletes. I hope you enjoyed this part of the show. I'll go ahead and talk about some of the results for this weekend to go ahead and wrap the show up full. And you will probably get two episodes this week because I'm going to do the women's review, the year in review, later this week with Rosie Hayward. But I really wanted to give the stadium, the Thai Stadium, its due. And the best way to give it its due is to bring in the man who is front and center, usually doing commentary, usually doing photos. He is one of the premier guys in this sport as far as Muay Thai generalism. Like he said, he doesn't do it for the money, in the way that I don't do this podcast for the money. I am excited to have him on the show, and I really appreciate him stopping by. So we're going to go ahead and go into K1 and their 60kg tournament. This, of course, was a big one for me as Koya Rube takes it. And, of course, you guys have been following the show for a while. I have three kids that I've been following. I've been following Iman Barlow since she was 15 years old now, 15, 16. I've been following Koya Rube since he was in Koshin, and I've been following Masaki Nori. Whenever they fight, I usually talk about how those are my kids. They've grown up. I've watched them grow up and become young elite fighters in their early 20s. This tournament, 60 kgs, the guy, because he was a crush champion for so long, is Hirotaka Urobe. If you're going to go into this tournament, that would probably be the name that you would lean. But his brother, Koya Urobe, was at the top of the tournament bracket. And I was like, you know what? If it comes down to those two, I'm going to pick the guy who fought on the bigger, stronger weight class of the past. Going to go ahead and go through the whole fights, not all the prelims. There were some KOs and stuff in the prelims. You know, I definitely don't want to rust in those, but there was definitely some good stuff. Hiromaru Ren's KO over Ishikawa Yuki, that was a pretty cool KO. And the broadcast opened up with a left hook KO where Goto Musunabu was able to get Seta Yuta out of there with the left hook KO. So there were definitely some in that, the prelims, but I'm going to really talk about the bulk of the card. I'm going to talk about the tournament field. We'll go through it slow. First of all, Javier Hernandez scored two knockdowns, one in the first, one in the second, over Shimano Kataro. And the thing about it is, I thought Hernandez, who, not who he was when he, you know, kind of burst on the scene with that, you know, win over Benui in the first ever event in Spain where It's Showtime went down there. Javier Hernandez kind of came out of nowhere. At the time, 60kgs had produced a lot of fighters, but that belt was changing hands. Sergio Wilson had it first. He lost it to Benui. Then Benui loses it to Hernandez. But that fight was just an awesome fight. And I thought that Hernandez, you know, his defense isn't as strong as it was when he was younger, but he was just as active. And then, you know, he scored the downs. But in the third round, he really showed some good skill set, really kind of put his offense together. He does a good job of throwing after knees. Like after he scores a step-up knee, hands are coming or a combination to a kick's coming. I really like that flow. He was able to get a unanimous decision victory over Kataro. Next fight in the card was Urube, you know, Hirotaka Urube, as he gets a win over Kareem Benui. TKO in the first round stoppage. Really, it was kind of a, you know, you see the hand speed of Hirotaka. He's got a nice sneaky high kick, but the thing that did it for him was a jumping knee that caused a cut over Kareem Benui. And it's weird because Kareem has fought at a bigger weight class, and you could see that he could take the shots come from Urobe. Like, he could take it, even though the hand speed was fast. He's just looking for his moment, just getting his feel going. But when that knee happened, he was cut. He went over there. The moment he went to the corner, because Hirotaka pointed at it, the moment he saw the blood, the moment he took it over to the doctor's corner, if you remember all the stuff that went down with Kevin Ross, you know, just a couple months ago, I was like, there's no chance that they're going to let this fight keep going. I think Kareem could have probably kept going, but, you know, they, you know, I guess the doctor took the side of safety, if you will, and he was able to, or they called it in the corner, and Hirotaka was able to move on. Kareem yelled in disappointment. You know, you work so hard for the tournament, and you know that you're going against the guy who's probably one of the main fighters in the card, and then you go down like that. Definitely disappointing. So he gave out a cry of, you know, just frustration, but Hirotaka Urabe moves on. Masahiro Yamamoto is a guy who has defeated Benui, a guy who has defeated Hernandez, and he you know, gets a victory over Gagne Barajadi. I wasn't sure because the way they're saying in the broadcast, I wasn't sure how it was pronounced. But Gagne, of course, I got that part down. But I think it's Baraji. When I looked at this guy, Gagne Barajadi is long, and he was able to land some shots at some weird angles. I want to say it was the second round where he just second or maybe it was the first round where he just said, "You know what? I can't play this slick game with you," and he just started throwing bombs. And he really did a good job of scoring well in moments. But Masahiro did a good job of staying composed, continued to look for kick combinations, continued to blend his hands together. Gagne was hittable because he's kind of tall and long, but he was turning over shots and he kept scoring. I thought that this one had, you know, extra round decision. I wouldn't doubt if it went to an extra round. I had Yamamoto winning after the first three rounds, and the scorecards all saw majority decision to Yamamoto. It was an entertaining fight back and forth. There were definitely some weird moments, and it was a fight that kind of told a couple of stories because Gagne really did sit down on some big shots there for a while, but Yamamoto was just too slick with the high kick in his movement, and he moves on. Koyarube then gets Denis Pyrek, and in the exchange that they were having, he had thrown a kind of a variation of a knee kick, and it landed in a weird spot. I thought that the knee landed kind of more in the upper torso, like around the chest, mid-chest. When I watched it, I felt like comfortable saying that that's where the shot landed. But man, when it did land, I could see that Pyrek was in trouble right away. And he bent over and he tried to take it down, and the ref came in and called it a slip. So then he had to take some more punishment before he went down again. And then not even necessarily taking a knee. It's almost like he just bent over, like taking a knee was too painful. He got up, and of course, Koyarube was able to finish it later in the round. He kept, you know, just throwing hands or whatever. He gets through, and you know how these tournaments are. The first round of the tournament, if you ever want to get a KO in anything, get a KO in the first round. The last round, of course, it's all cool, and, you know, because it's kind of a walk-off, you get a KO there. But, man, if you can make your earlier fights less rounds, it's always to your benefit. And Koyarube got out pretty much unscathed after the first, you know, first fight. He moved on in the tournament. Go ahead and talk about a couple of the super fights right now. Sonny Dalback defeated Yoshihiro Sato. And, you know, it's weird because I thought Sato had much better pacing in this fight. I think the first time they fought, when they fought in Glory, I thought that Sato, you know, because it was kind of a weird change. I think that I'm not sure who Sato was supposed to originally fight. But once him and Sonny Dalback started to fight, I really thought that the pacing of it was, you know, he's trying to land his boxing, and Sonny was just too slick for him, able to get out of the way. And every punch Sonny Dalback threw, I thought it was going to land. So he was able to score over Yoshihiro Sato. But Dalback spent a lot of time in Thailand lately, so he was consistent with the body kicks throughout. I thought Sato did a good job of scoring early. I thought his combination work was good because he would throw kicks, and then every once in a while, just a little clean, you know, 1-2 here, or hook cross here, and he was able to score. And Dalback was scoring too, because Dalback, the better athlete, the same thing that Yoshihiro Sato's had trouble with his whole career, good athletes, Dalback would just start throwing, and every once in a while, something would get through. But for three rounds, I thought Sato did a good job pacing himself, keeping himself at distance. But I thought an extra round was coming. But I could see how, if you know, they could make an argument for Sato. But I thought the extra round was coming. When they got to the extra frame, the early work of Sonny had showed up. The body kicks that slowed Yoshihiro Sato. He had a weird, you know, really, Sato, the fight changed for him in the third round when I thought that he really relied on boxing all of a sudden. I thought that you could make the argument that he was up 1-2. But in the third round, he just decided, I'm going to go out and try to box this guy. I'm going to try to land something big with my hands. And Sonny Dalback wasn't having it. That was all the moment that he needed. He started to score with a lot of punches, a lot of body kicks. Going to the extra round, he carried that work in, and Sato was just gassed. The body shots, everything had worked on him. The high kick that Dalback scored, it wasn't one of those killer, you know, shin to neck. It was just the foot kind of going across the cheek of Yoshihiro Sato. But the thing that did it was the earlier work, and Sato was barely able to stand from the fatigue that he took from the body kicks. He goes down after the head kick. He got back up, and a flurry ended the fight for him. But really, I thought it was the consistent body kicks early in the fight that completed Sonny Dalback's work. And it's one of those fights that has a beginning, middle, and end, where you have, I'm going to get started with my movement, I'm going to score my body kicks. I'm going to pick up the boxing, and I'm going to pick up the body kicks and look for my sneaky high kick here and there. Then you get the fourth round. I have worn you down with the work that it did earlier. Now for the finish. And the finish was a great work with the kick, the high kick, and the hands. Another fight I want to mention because it was the worst ref fight I could possibly imagine. Kamaru Minoru gets a victory over Kuvertex that should have been a KO stoppage for Kuvertex. Basically what happened in the fight was Kuvertex better in every way than Kamaru. Kamaru is a, I'm not sure where he's from, but he is as Western as it gets. He's a white dude. Western as it gets. I'm not sure if he's Swedish or English or whatever, but he speaks Japanese super fluid. Like, he grabbed the mic, and, you know, you might as well have thought that he was a Japanese wrestler the way he was spitting. And when I watched that performance, I credit him for staying tough, and he landed a big shot over Kuvertex that scored a down in the third round. But before that shot landed, and even after the shot landed, Kuvertex was dominating the fight. And Kuvertex had Minoru hurt in the second round. And when he was going in for the finish, he wasn't in a double-armed full clinch. He just kind of set the hand on top of the head and he threw a knee. It was clear, not enforced at all. And the ref, I'm telling you, if you watch him from the very first round, he is in there ready to break them up, ready to call whatever catch kick. And you guys, you heard me say it in the show of 2014. I hate the rule where you punish a guy for catching a kick. If you throw a weak kick, it's not my fault that I just, you know, caught it and disregarded it. I shouldn't be punished for catching your whack kick. In this fight, he threw some kicks that Kuvertex, you know, bigger, stronger, been seeing kicks his whole life. You're not going to get nothing on them. He'd catch the kick and he looked to throw hands afterwards. Give them their catch. Now, if you don't want them to throw a lot of strikes, if you don't want them to get dumped, I understand that. But if you catch a kick, I mean, it's just you should have the right to keep flowing with offense. The ref was standing literally right on them. And anytime it looked like they were in clinch, he'd yell no clinching. He wanted to enforce himself in the fight from jump. And I am the most critical of refs that do this. It was a horrible job of him from start to finish. Kuvertex, you know, gets a loss on it. And Minoru, I mean, he was just super ecstatic that he pulled off the upset, but Kuvertex almost had him stopped in that second round several times, and every single time the ref came in, separated him, didn't take a point, just yelled and argued and wanted to impose himself on the fight. And that is something that you guys have, if you've been listening to my podcast for a while, it's something that I'm critical with other people for. I don't want to see you in my fight if you're a ref. I don't want to hear you. All I want you to do is protect the fighters, and if it's a down, say there's a down. But I don't want you imposing yourself. I don't want you talking to corners. I remember, you know, there was a fight that I was watching, and one of the refs, he penalized the corner for, like, yelling something or whatever, and he was just talking to the corner. And I'm like, who cares what the corner's yelling? They're talking to their athlete. They're trying to get their athlete to the best of their ability. Leave them alone. You know what I'm saying? Like let's let the what's happening in the ring dictate what happens on the cards. And I felt like this guy stepped in there, changed the nature of the fight, and the win went to the wrong person. Going to go ahead and finish up the tournament now. Hirotaka Urobe gets a extra round decision over Javier Hernandez. This fight was awesome. Like, this, just back and forth, speed, really good. Hirotaka, when his power isn't there, he still tries to throw with fast hands. And Javier Hernandez, I really thought, did a good job of pushing. And in the extra round in particular, I thought he was starting to take over the fight. I thought Hirotaka was slowing. He was just not able to sustain the same offense that he had earlier in the fight. Took a lot of low kicks. Javier Hernandez did a really good job of scoring low kicks to both legs to the outside. I thought it was a good performance, considering Javier's not what he was. You know, he's just, as I mentioned, when he won the It's Showtime title, he was, like, considered the man. You wanted to see him fight a lot. But, you know, after rematching some guys in his area, because he didn't have that many fighters to compete with at 60 kgs, he came out to Japan and he had a couple losses. And that was just, you know, 4 years ago. You know, we're in 2015 now, so it's about 5 years ago now. So he's not what he was, but I still think that he put on a great performance. I thought that he did a good job with his combination work, and I thought that he was winning the extra round, and then bang, hook drops him. He knows right away. I mean, you know, he gets up after the shot, but that was the decider. Hirotaka Urobe moves on. Good showing for Javier Hernandez, because if you're an international fighter and you get this opportunity, at minimum, you want to try to get to the next stage. You want to try to get to the next round. So if you get past the first round, you get to the semifinals, you want to win it all. But if you get there, you can look back in your experience and say, hey, I went out to Japan and I did all right. Yomamoto Masahiro is stopped by leg kicks by Koya Arobe. He took too much from Gagne in his fight. And it's not like he took a huge amount, but he just took them and he didn't really block them because he was looking for his own work. Koya Arobe just came out and just established the low kicks immediately. Hurt him immediately and got him out of there immediately. So now you've got two fights where you're done fighting in less than 3 minutes. He goes into the final fight completely fresh against his brother. And Hirotaka Arobe came off of a, you know, grueling extra round decision that was won pretty much on one punch. For the 3 rounds, Koya Arobe just kind of dominated with low kicks, and it was a really weird moment. Like it was a weird fight to watch, because I sat there joking on Twitter the whole time about how I can't wait for their brothers to compete. The making adding to it was the gym had like shirts that had both brothers' names on it, and they had like this kind of entrance where a whole bunch of people wearing the red shirt with the white writing of both guys as they came out there. So you have both corners split, so both corners are wearing the exact same thing, and these guys are competing in there. And Koya Arobe, he knows he's just, you know, got a wounded duck, and Hirotaka was looking to throw, but they fought in a way where it's like, is this sparring? Because, you know, Hirotaka is just, he has like those fast hands that don't necessarily score with pop. Koya Arobe, I think, was trying to actually stop him at times. I think that he was trying to close the distance and throw sharp hands. I thought he was looking for the low kick, but really strong. He definitely hurt him. And as soon as the fight was over with, I'm telling you, there was very little love in there. Not too much hugging, not too much, you know, congratulations or whatever. It seemed like both guys really wanted it. And the promo set it up. I mean, the Japanese promos have both brothers out on a beach, and it just kind of showed them talking to one brother and the other brother watching from the audience as he wins, you know, Hirotaka wins the ISKA title. And then as they're sitting there talking, Hirotaka's got the ISKA title on one shoulder, and I think he had the Crush title on the other shoulder. And Koya Arobe, he comes out and they had a title for him to sit there with. And I'm telling you, they set it up for these brothers to fight each other, and they did. And we talk about wanting the Klitschkos to fight each other, and we all know it was never going to happen. If it had happened, it would have been awesome. This was actually pretty cool, because the extra drama that came with it, you wonder what that ride home was like. You wonder what it was like the next time these guys meet at a family function. You wonder if their mom was in the audience. Just really weird stuff all around. I want to thank you guys all very much for the show. One more quick wet rundown. Going to go ahead and slide these results in. Just because I don't know if I'll be able to get to them later in the week. Definitely want to mention that good stuff by Mike Zambides, who defended his Super Combat title this past weekend. The combination that he put together, I'm telling you, the offense of a slot, just combo, low kick, combo, low kick, combo, high kick. Awesome stuff. You definitely want to check that out. And then going to go ahead, shout out to Legacy Kickboxing for their first kickboxing show. We'll go ahead and run through some of these results. Cosmo Alexander gets a victory over Region Ursel, and I thought Ursel did a good job of making a good account for himself, landing combinations and weird angled single strikes. Cosmo Alexander, you know, powered up and was able to, you know, score combinations and low kick, something that I think he should do a lot more of. He was able to get a decision victory here. Pretty much like a lot of other Cosmo fights when he doesn't really let it go. Cosmo, the explosion that he had, I'm telling you, in the 2000s, there was at any moment he could do a jumping knee or something and you were in trouble. That guy isn't around anymore. The guy we have now is a very skilled, very smart guy whose defense is strong and he's tough to deal with. Cosmo Alexander gets a victory. Pat Barry gets by his words, a career-saving victory, as he would have retired if he lost to Demario Dennis. Demario Dennis, friend of mine, he's come and trained with me before. I thought that he made a great account for himself. Pat Barry made a decent account, considering it's tough to get back into kickboxing full-time. And, you know, in MMA, the flow is different. The way the fight takes place is different. And Pat, you know, he left kickboxing for the money. And he said he didn't, you know, I remember after one of his fights, my fighter, Johnny Hendricks, fought Koscheck, and he fought LeVar Johnson on that card. And after the fight, I asked him, you know, about it. He goes, I don't love MMA, but it's where I make my money. And I think he did enjoy and love kickboxing. But, you know, after all of his time in China and all of his time trying to, you know, make it to the top and, you know, K1 going away and the MMA opportunities and hit the popularity that comes from MMA and the fact that he's just a talker, you know, he'll just, if you say hi, he's got like 2 miles of words for you. He's a great guy in a sport. Both of these guys were just, I'm telling you, they put on a pretty decent fight considering you expect that kind of anger and gall, and they didn't need any of it. They just shook hands and they laughed and they joked throughout. And Pat said, hey, you know, if it didn't go my way, I probably would have walked away. He's got the next fight set up, you know, against Rob Buzzitti, and that's going to take place in Dubai. So he'll take that opportunity. Clearly, at this point, Buzzitti, who's been fighting elite guys for a long time, definitely looks to be the easy favorite in that one. But Pat's going to go ahead and ride it out. He said, I've got about three or four fights left. And I think that that's awesome that he understands that there's an end to it. He's going to compete to the best of his abilities. Marco Piquet took back the clock as he fought Michael Corley. And I'm telling you, Piquet is a guy who, when he fought in Lion Fight last year, I was like, dude, this guy's old. He's spent. It's gone. I mean, he's still, this is the guy who once upon a time had Nicky Holtzkin beat. Period, exclamation point, he had him beat. And it just didn't work out. Like, he wasn't able to finish it. In one of the fights, he was dropped in the Muay Thai Premier League. He was dropped in the third round after winning the fight before it. And then he was stopped, I want to say, in a fourth or fifth round of another fight where he was up on the cards against Nicky Holtzkin. He had the explosion. I was there when he hit Sean Wright with that overhand counter. Still one of the hardest shots I think I've ever heard live when he fought Sean Wright in Jamaica. And even though he was slowing down, I always thought there's an opportunity for him to land something. He put in a clinic against Corley. He's just better. Combinations, low kicks, had him hurt with the low kicks. Had the liver kick write-up says he scored with basically everything. That's probably the most accurate assessment of what happened in that fight. And Corley had a decent start trying to get the combinations, try to get the low kick going and so on. But PK just, he'd seen it all. And, you know, the counter right hand, that he throws his overhand right. The step-up knees had, you know, dropped Corley. It's just too much. And Corley, shout out for him let me step up. Let me go against somebody tougher. Let me challenge myself. Good job by Michael Corley given the opportunity. But Marco PK turned back the clock and put on a performance that he hasn't had since he was younger. Valentina Shevchenko defeated Lindsay Haycraft. I'm going to talk about that later in this week because I'm going to give you guys two podcast shows this week. Definitely appreciate all your time, but I want to let that women's show really be my big focus for the end of the week. So thank you for all the people who have been listening, been following the podcast. I'll do my best to keep bringing high-level kickboxing and Muay Thai to you. Thanks to all the followers, and I apologize for the technical difficulties that happened while I was talking to Rob. He's in Thailand. Who knows how good the internet is where he was. I'm just glad we were able to put a show together. So thank you all very much. I love you, and I appreciate the support. God bless, and you guys all have a good one. Peace.